Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 30th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening in over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions. We got that mail back now, so questions at nationallibertyalliance.org, and that's plural. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to have a scripture reading for the night, if I can find it. Okay, it's going to be Luke chapter 23, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 23. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation, and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And Pilate asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews?
Thank you.
Then thou sayest it. The people, I find no fault in this man. And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. And the same day Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for before they were at enmity between themselves. And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, said unto them, Ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him. And lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For of necessity he must release one unto them at the feast. And they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas, who for a certain sedition made in the city, and for murder, was cast into prison. Pilate therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. And he said unto them the third time, Why, what evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him, and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired, but he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrenian, coming out of the country, and on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming in the which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Then shall they begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? And there were also two other malefactors led with him to be put to death. And when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified him and the malefactors, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. And the people stood beholding. And the rulers also with them derided him, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he be Christ, the chosen of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, If thou be the king of the Jews, save thyself. And a superscription also was written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew, This is the king of the Jews. And one of the malefactors which were hanged railed on him, saying, If thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, Dost not thou fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, Certainly this was a righteous man. And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts and returned. And all his acquaintance, and the women that followed him from Galilee, stood afar off, beholding these things. And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and he was a good man and a just. The same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them. He was of Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who also himself waited for the kingdom of God. This man went unto Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in linen, and laid it in a sepulchre that was hewn in stone, wherein never man before was laid. And that day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. And the women also, which came with him from Galilee, followed after, and beheld the sepulchre, and how his body was laid. And they returned, and prepared spices and ointments, and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight, or any announcements?
Yes, we have two questions, and if you're going to cover it, the fact that we now take questions as plural questions with an S on it, we need to make that public. So if you want to submit a question for the Monday night call, just send it to questions with an S at nationallibertyalliance.org. The first question is, can you sue a State Department of Revenue auditor for defamation of character? Meaning they portrayed me as a public officer, trade, or business in order to take property or my earnings from me.
Well, anybody who steps outside of their authority no longer is protected by their office. The only time they're protected by their office is when they act with inside their authority. And in inside authority, I guess errors could happen, that kind of thing. They can't be held accountable. But yes, for that, you could sue. You have to be very careful suing them, make sure you're very detailed. But, you know, you're going up against the status quo. You're going up against one of them. They protect each other very, very strongly. And so you do want to be careful. If they're coming out after you for something that they can turn into a criminal thing, you're going to want to be very careful. You know, there's a lot of people in jail that don't belong in jail. A lot of people in jail that don't belong in jail. So we are moving forward with our case. We're going to start our case against the Supreme Court. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, and that might be something you might want to work with on us with, and and try to get justice through that process. Okay, Jen, anything else? Jan, you hearing me? Are you still muted, maybe?
Yes, it's hard to unmute tonight. My stepson and his mother were coming home from work at 1:50 a.m. He was pulled over and cited a fine for not having current tabs. The vehicle is registered to me, his stepdad. The vehicle lists the registration lists the vehicle as a passenger vehicle, not a motor vehicle. As I understand, no state can make an inalienable right into a privilege. One question, can a person driving a vehicle not his own be cited for not having tabs? How is that allowed? Can we get out of this bogus ticket? Where do I find in the NLA site the section on dealing with traffic violations?
Well, again, you know, same thing. You know, the courts are problematic. You don't have unalienable rights in the court. They don't exist no more. They've got civil rights, and they'll give it to you if they decide to give it to you. If you're going up against them, they're not going to give it to you. But, you know, there is a process you can do and potentially win it. Nevertheless, it's all, you know, again, that's why we're going to the Supreme Court. That's why we need the support of as many people as possible so that we can get this case before the Supreme Court. In any event, you can challenge jurisdiction. And I don't know what kind of a background you have, this person, if they understand how the courts work and how to file papers and a proper mindset that you have to have. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven. Okay, and it must be decided. That's the key. It has to be decided. So if you file a paper, we do have some paperwork on this. Again, I don't know your background, if you got any experience in the court. So let's see. You can go to under Education Starts Here. You can come down to Law, and you can come over to Court Forms and Process. And on this, you'll see some information concerning traffic court. Let's see. Here, instructions and forms for traffic court. You can go through this information. It's both in Word and PDF. And the key thing, though, is to challenge the jurisdiction. So this is what you really want to do, is follow these instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. You have to understand how jurisdiction is in the courts or should be in the courts. And no court can hear a case that don't have jurisdiction. And once you challenge jurisdiction, as I mentioned before, it must be decided. So once you file your paper into the court, then you're going to want to, of course, have that paper notarized and filed into the court. And you want to make sure it gets there before you get to the court. And you want to make sure that the prosecutor gets a copy of this, because now they have prosecutors in trial courts. They used to not have that some years back, but now they got prosecutors. So anyway, you want to make sure they both get a copy of that, and you'll want to have extra copies when you come with you, because I can assure you they're going to say, oh, I didn't get that. Well, so you got a copy for them, okay? Now, the judge is going to turn around. They always do this. They're going to turn around and say, well, okay, I've got jurisdiction. Or they're just going to say, let's move on. And you got to then let them know that jurisdiction, once challenged, must be decided. And the judge will then say, okay, then I just decided that I got jurisdiction. Well, you believe you have jurisdiction, so you're biased on that process to begin with, number one. Number two, I filed an affidavit challenging the jurisdiction, and it has not been rebutted. Your prosecutor got a copy of that. The prosecutor did not rebut it. And so therefore, you know, the only decision you could make at this point is on what my affidavit has to say. And of course, the affidavit has plenty of proof that they don't have the jurisdiction. Now, they're probably going to pursue it anyway. They'll probably put it off till next week or, I mean, next month or whatever the case may be. Well, you need to then move it into federal court for cause. And we do have some information, instructions, and forms to move your case for cause right here. I don't know if this person is seeing this, but if you're on the phone or Well, if you watch this on the video on YouTube or Rumble, of course, you can pause it and you'll see all this information. But here's the instructions and forms to move your case to the federal court for cause. Now, you have to be very careful moving your case to the court for cause, because the federal courts cannot hear anything except for what is in their jurisdiction. And the federal court jurisdiction is a constitutional jurisdiction. So you have to have a cause, a constitutional cause. And the cause you want to go in on is due process. They don't have they denied you the due process. You challenge jurisdiction. You can kind of leave that alone. You got to think about that. You might want to add it into the case. You might not. But the key thing is that they had denied you jurisdiction. So you challenged the jurisdiction. They denied a hearing. They denied jurisdiction. So you're moving it into that court, to federal court. And what you're going to be asking for in your wherefore clause is for them to cease and desist. And you're going to probably want to get some money for an injury. You know, I was doing $1,000 in Morgan Silver dollars face value. You've got to be very careful and make sure you're very clear with that. But right now, $1,000 in silver dollars is a whole lot of money, a lot more than it was, you know, a few months back. So I think you might want to go for $250 or $500 at the most dollars in real money, and then define that real money in Morgan Silver dollars. So I don't know what is silver going for these days. It must be $100 probably. If anybody knows, maybe they can pipe in. But if it's $100, that's a lot of money for $250 in face value money. So that's your wherefore clause. We do write that wherefore clause up in the instructions to form to move your case for cause. And you know, not that you're necessarily going to win it. You know, meanwhile, they're going to push you in the other court. You're going to notify them that you've moved. You're going to, of course, you got to copy them that this case has been moved to the federal court. Sometimes they'll continue the case anyway. They're going to find you guilty and give you a fine. So you pay the fine, and then you file more charges on top of that, maybe for another $250. Dollars and you know, face value Morgan Silver dollars or whatever you want to do on that, because that's another charge against them. But again, you can't get into the details of the argument in the court, the fact that it's a traffic case or any of those things, because once you get into details that they can, that the federal court cannot hear, if it's inside your paperwork, they can't hear anything then. And the other side, and if you actually have a hearing, you know, you're gonna you're going to want to. I always ask for a jury anyway. They never give it to you because they decide that they just don't like to give juries. And that's where they're at. So you might not win in the federal court either. Now, we'll talk in a few minutes concerning some of the things we're doing, hoping to solve some of these problems in the courts. And is that it, Jan? Was the only two questions?
Yes, there were only two. Silver was $63 today, roughly.
Okay. All right, let's see. All right, well, we're doing here. Well, let's go to our front page here for those who weren't here. We've been working and talking about this for 2 weeks now, at least, maybe three. We did get one person who gave us some money, so we can start the case. We don't have enough to finish the case, but we, you know, so we need money to get through this case. We need to go up to the Supreme Court. We've already did an indictment on the entire federal judiciary. We did that actually about a year ago. And, you know, we've been doing presentments to President Trump, educating him and also copying him and his administration. We were copying like 43 individuals up in Trump's administration and a few senators and congressmen. And we've also sent the book Government by Consent to all those individuals also. So they've been kind of primed from listening to what particularly what Trump has been saying over the course of the last month or so. It seems like he understands that there's a serious problem in the courts. Now, if anyone should understand that, he should understand it anyway, because of the abuse that has been piled up against him. But the federal judiciary is completely guilty of treason. Every single judge in the federal judiciary is guilty of treason because they closed the courts of justice. They've abrogated the law of the land. Now, that all started with the Rules Enabling Act, the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which gave the United States Supreme Court the power and the authority, which they didn't have the power or the authority to give anyway, but they gave it to them, and they didn't have the power or the authority to take it, but they did, and they wrote rules. And in the rules, they totally shredded the Constitution. They got rid of the law of the land, turned it to civil law, and they did a lot more damage than that, of course, but that's the primary focus. Now, we did put a video together, and people can watch that video. We did play it last week. It is a 20-minute video, so anybody who hasn't done it, you can find it here right on our front page, which affidavit for the U.S. Supreme Court. You can download that if you want to join on to the case. We have a video. If you click here for more details, you'll see the 20-minute video, which lays out all of the powers and the authorities that they took away from we the people. And it's pretty clear. Now, the Supreme Court that did this, this goes back again to 1938. Now, it's up to the United States Supreme Court. If we get enough people focused in on this, if we get this conversation going, you know, out on social media, and if we get this video that we put up on both YouTube and Rumble to go viral, we will be sending copies of everything we're doing to Trump and his administration. And it's quite a bit of paperwork. It's probably close to 200 pages of paper, plus whoever joins us. We have a lot of evidence to show conspiracy between all of the federal courts and how they've been ruling and how they shut the doors of justice. But it does go beyond that, because they've turned our courts to chancery courts. And chancery court, of course, is a civil law court. And so they write civil law with no concern for our Constitution. But that not only goes through the federal system, it also goes down to every single state in the union, every single one of them. Every state court in the United States has shut down, the justice courts. Every single one of them have turned to civil law. And that goes even further than that. It goes into the county courts, the town courts, the village courts, the city courts. Every court in America has become a chancery court. And again, exposure and people seeing this and getting, you know, enough behind us, and I think Trump is ready to do something with judges at some point. He talks about it. They need to go. I don't know how things are going to go on the next election for the midterms. If we can get enough seats in the Senate and the Congress, which is possible, I think, considering, you know, that people are starting to realize how bad this Democrat Party is, and of course some Republicans too. But if we can get enough people in, we can press them, and I think Trump might move for it, is to impeach. I think we're making the case that every single judge needs to be impeached. The Bar Association has to cease and desist. They teach and train people in treason. We will be laying this out in our case. We have sent two presentments to the United States Supreme Court. Actually, it was the same one. We sent one in, and the doorkeeper, you know, got in the way of it and sent it back. We sent it back to them again a few weeks later, and the doorkeeper again sent it back and says, "No, you got to go through the trial court and work your way up to the Supreme Court. You can't come in this way." And now that's a lie. We did file a paper on top of this laying things out, because we knew that they were going to play a game with it and let it be known that, you know, any case that you're coming in challenging, particularly the Constitution itself, a violation of the Constitution, they don't have the power or the authority to make that decision on the trial court level, neither on the appellate level. It has to go to the Supreme Court. But we'll take that paper that they sent to us telling us we need to go this way and use that to actually leverage our way into the trial courts. And they're going to kick it out. They're going to say they can't make a decision on this. Or maybe they'll even play a game and say other things and just do a denial or something. I don't know. But that's okay. Then we'd move it into the appellate court, Court of Appeals. And they'll do the same thing. And that gives us the opportunity to get to the Supreme Court. I do believe that this case will move rather quickly, at least to get it to the doors of the Supreme Court, right to the doorstep, because they're just going to reject it. So it could take 4 to 6 months to do that. They will drag their feet a little maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it'll go even quicker. Once you get to the Supreme Court, then it depends on, you know, what other cases are coming up, when these cases might be considered. And that could take months and even longer than just a few months. So it could take maybe 8 months before it actually could hit the Supreme Court. Now, if we get enough focus on this, the Supreme Court will have to deal with this, I think. And if we can get the administration to leverage behind us, I think, again, that's more pressure to be able to get them. And we will be, you know, of course, like I said, copying, you know, the administration with everything. And if we get a majority, we're going to need 2/3 majority in both houses. Difficult thing to do, but possible because of the craziness, the insanity of these people in Congress and in the Senate. I got to believe people are just, we're going to win quite high. I could be wrong on that. I do believe we'll definitely maintain and get a majority. But we need 2/3 to go through the process in the House to impeach. And then we need 2/3 to agree on a trial. And then the final impeachment, of course, would be decided on that. And we got enough evidence to lay out, and it's just so overwhelming. And it's so bold the way they just ignore the Constitution and violate the Constitution. Judges even saying in their courtrooms, you know, the Constitution doesn't have anything to do here. You know, that's how bad it is. I've heard that in two different cases. And I'm sure it happens a lot more than that. There are people in jail that have not gone through the process, got their due process. There is an individual that I might try to highlight. I got to get some information on this case first, but they've been in jail for a long time, I think 30 years, and I don't know, they got 40 or 50 years, and I don't have the details on it, but it's a long time, and the person's still in jail. It's a federal case. We did a habeas corpus for them. They ignored the habeas corpus. They've never had their due process, and the case was that he had threatened a federal judge. And there was no evidence in the case proving that. I'm trying to get a hold of the case before we would be able to lift this case up. We have to be absolutely sure that this is the case. So I'm hoping to get a hold of that case to get that information to make the point. And, you know, people need to be held liable, okay? Even if he did threaten the judge, it's not like he came and assaulted the judge. It's not like he came and actually... you know, did anything in physical harm, and what kind of threat was it? You know, I mean, you know, I'm going to shoot you, or some other silly kind of a threat. But no threat to anybody is to get 40 or 50 years in jail, and denied due process, and abused in the system. So this person, I understand, has gone through hell. And they are not alone. There are lots of cases. We were involved in the Hammond case, and went out there out west, and the abuse was unbelievable on that. We've detailed that abuse. We've did habeas corpuses, and again, ignored, because they don't care. They're lawless. They're totally lawless. So it's up to the people to be able to assist to get this case into the Supreme Court. Now, like I said, there's a couple of hundred pages, or close to, if not, this case is going to be probably over 200 pages. Now, we have to copy that. If we're going to get to all 42 individuals, in Trump's administration and a few senators and congressmen, so it's like 42 individuals we have been copying. So we have 42 mailings that we have to do. And a lot of paper, a lot of toner we're going to need, and then we have to file it in the court. They want money, so we have to give them money to get into the court. We're going to demand our money back all along the line. But nevertheless, that costs money. To file a federal court case right now, I think, is $410. I'm not sure what the appeal is. It's probably another $400. I'll have to look into that. And to get into the Supreme Court, that's a few dollars, too. I mean, I think I saw $600 or something like that. But again, if it's $400 or $4, $8, $12, that's $1,200 just for the filing fees at bare minimum, okay? Then we have to file the papers. We have to, I think it's 10 copies or 12 copies that we have to send in. Everything has to be certified, return slip, or we have to be able to prove that they got it, because they like to lose things. And so it's going to cost some money. Now, we did get some money. I got one person who gave us some money. It's enough to get started. It's not enough to finish. So what I'm asking, and we'd like to get as many people as possible who would like to attach an affidavit to this. If you have a court case, let me click on the affidavit so we can click a look at that. We want a one-page affidavit, nothing more than one page. And one page, we don't need your whole case. The purpose of this really is to really kind of get your case in on the one hand, but ultimately winning this case, which is a possibility, considering the times we're in and what's being revealed and the anger of the people. I mean, there are so many problems in this nation. And it is going to be a huge exposure this year. I mean, very huge exposure on things that are going to disturb people very severely, of what these people, who these people are, what they've been doing, and what they've been doing behind closed doors, abusing children, and just unspeakable things. And when that hits the news, and even the fake news, they're going to have a problem trying to ignore this, if they're still there, because they should be arrested also for aiding and abetting, because they've been working to assist to destroy this great nation. And so, if we can get, I think we have a good opportunity here, because I think we can get enough people on the midterms, considering what's about to unfold. And we need to get to that point in the courts, in the legislators, both houses that have a majority, two-thirds majority in each house, in order to accomplish the impeachment and the trial for the impeachment. And I truly believe that all these judges should go to jail. That's what I think. I don't know. We will try to push maybe for trials outside after the impeachment, potentially speaking, if we can get through to that point. But it's up to the people to decide on this. But they definitely have to go. The Bar Association must cease and desist. We do cover a lot about that in the case concerning the bar, how they have been operating to destroy our courts and have been doing so since at least 1750, even while we were in the colonies before we became states. So we're laying all that out and all of the violations. But anyway, the affidavit basically is very simple. I'm just going to try to breeze through this quickly. You got to put your name here as the affiant, being of lawful age, qualified and competent to testify, to having first-hand knowledge of the following facts, to hereby swear that the following facts are true, correct, and not misleading. Then we look for the case number of your case, the name of the court, the address of the court, your county. If it's a civil or criminal case, we want the number. The date filed. We need the plaintiffs and the defendants, depending on which you are. Sometimes you may be, you could be either one to join our case. The case disposition in 1 to 4 sentences is just very simple. This is a one pager. Okay. And then read the amendment 4, 5, 7, and 8, and see once whether your case could be said to be violations of that. The key is the violation of due process. That would be Amendment 5 and Amendment 7. And so if you were denied, and anybody who's gone into the court since 1938, and maybe it took a few years before it really, you know, sort of acclimated itself throughout the whole nation, but in any event, as long as we've been alive, pretty much, if you've gone into any of these courts, you did not get due process because you were in chancery courts. We will have a special time period where, you know, once we get into get it going towards the Supreme Court, then we will start working with people to try to kind of give them some information and education on their case and how to put it together, and we'll probably do some examples, and we'll just work together in as a group. Anybody who wants to do this, it is important. Matter of fact, I think we want to require this for anybody that's going to attach their case as an affidavit. You need to take our course. It's a 90-hour course. You can click here to sign up for our court access in the common law course. This will teach you due process. It will teach you how the courts are structured as far as how a court case works, the different forms, how to write papers. You know, because if you're going to go defend your case, you're the one that's going to have to do it. There's no way that I could do it for you. We don't have lawyers and things or anybody that's enough people that understand the common law well enough to be able to take cases on. And so you'd have we'll just train you how to do this. You're going to have to do it yourself. But we can help writing the papers, assisting in writing the papers. And we would probably come in a room like this and make some discussions and figure out the key points and assist in paragraphs on this point and paragraphs on that point. But you have to know how to move a case through the court. If you don't understand how to move a case to the court, and you don't understand the proper mindset as you're doing that, then they're just going to throw it out. But I do think the possibility of the success is there in the courts, providing we get enough people's attention to this case. We also will set something up maybe where people will want to just sign on, just that, you know, that the... you know, that we're challenging these things and that they are violating the Constitution. I can't even think on how many violations. 30 violations, maybe? No, I don't know. If anybody interested in this, hopefully everybody should be interested in this, go watch the video, okay? Here, right under the affidavit that you would download. And the other thing is we need money, okay? Anybody that wants to attach a case... You know, I'd like to say they should put $100 in or something, but, you know, people should put at least $50 in if they want to get a case in. We need the money to really pay for all this. We don't have the money. You know, we depend and rely on donations. But if you click on more details, okay, you'll come to our YouTube page. Only the people can save the Republic. And this gets into the treasonous courts. It lays out exactly all the violations, how they shredded this Constitution, how they abrogated the law of the land. Literally, you know, don't take this lightly. This is a fact. They have abrogated the law of the land. The Constitution is gone in the courtrooms. It's gone. And we need to take it back. People need to take this serious. Anybody else that's listening, we need your support. You know, give us $5 a month or more to support NLA. Everybody should be doing that anyway. And, you know, give us a one-time donation, 20, 30, 50, 60, 100, whatever you can give us. Just give it to us so that we can run this case through. Any leftover monies will go back into the NLA to support the work we're doing and to do other things. You know, we're really pushing forward towards trying to get committees of safety. You know, it's slow and moving. Again, we need critical mass. If we get critical mass with this video here on YouTube, and we also have a copy of this on Rumble also, but if we get critical mass through this YouTube, then we'll get a lot of attention. Hopefully we'll get a lot of people, become members, come in, hear what's going on, get involved, and then maybe we can go professional. We really need to go professional to do all the things we want to do. You know, a friend of mine who's a member here put it to me this way. He said, "John, we got good news, we got bad news." And I said, "Yeah, what's that?" He says, "The good news is we got volunteers. And the bad news, we got volunteers. We're not going to get anything done with volunteers because people are putting their time in the best they can. We need to pay people to do a job. They need to be working 40 hours a week, and they need to be producing. And you can't force people who are volunteering to produce anything. You know, it's up to them to do the job and get things done. We do get a lot of people that have volunteered in the past, and they just fade away, you know, unfortunately. But we need people with, you know, determination. We need people that truly will support what we're doing. We need people who are truly interested in saving our republic. Because Trump can do everything he could do. He could bring the economy back. He can get rid of the IRS. He can go back to real money, gold and silver. He can bring peace around the world, which he's working on right now. He's working on all these things, as a matter of fact. So he's could do a lot of things. But if we don't get our courts back, then we have nothing. We have nothing. Because they'll continue to fleece you in these lower courts, these traffic courts, these civil law courts. They'll continue to just take your money and abuse you and put you in jail. If you piss them off enough, they'll put you in jail. And those people who have no experience in the courts, they have no clue. I know it's hard for them to believe. I would believe it'd be hard for them to believe. And you may find your day in court one day and discover the truth. We have a problem. We, the people, have lost the republic. It's not there. It doesn't matter if the administration is good. And but again, you know, even to some degree, you know, both houses on the federal level. We also have problems in the state levels. You know, we win on the federal level, we'll take it right down into the states because we'll drive it right down to the village court. And we can do that through using the federal court to do so. But we have to get rid of these monsters, these evil people, because that's what they are. They don't even know how evil they are. I don't think if they understood how evil they are, if they understood how much damage. And if they step back, maybe they're psychopaths, maybe they're sociopaths, maybe they don't have, they really never can care. I strongly suspect that might be. Lawyers are trained to be greedy, you know. That's all they do is think about money. Every lawyer I ever talked, not every lawyer, maybe, I met maybe two that didn't, but every lawyer, other lawyer that I've had any conversation with, any relation or to work with them or whatever. It's all about money, 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 money. They don't care if they win the case. They don't care if they lose the case. They just want your money. You know, it costs between $400,000 and $1 million in there is the average cost to take a case to get it to the Supreme Court. Just think about that. I mean, who can afford that? Of course they'll abuse us all because you're not going to get your cases up there. And lawyers certainly are not going to take these cases to the Supreme Court. They would lose their what they claim to be their license. They won't be able to practice law. They will be kicked out of the system. So lawyers are not going to take this case anyway. If they did, they'd water it down, and they don't care if they lose, and they would lose because they'd water it down in a way that they would lose. So only exposure to the people, only to get the administration behind us, and hopefully to get in the upcoming election, get enough people in Congress and in the Senate that will do the right thing. But we could do, even if we don't get enough to do that, there are other routes we could go, because the way we're writing our papers, it's almost like the Declaration of Independence, and we have the unalienable right, in law and at law, to remove every single judge for subversion, for treason. And that's a possibility. It'll be a tough case to push, but if we have the people behind us, we can accomplish it. I truly do believe that. And you know what? Woe is us if we don't at least try. And your children will pay the price for this. Because if we don't get our courts back, it's only going to get worse. It does not matter. All right, I guess that's all I got to say. By the way, we have the queue open. If anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. Let me see if anybody's in there right now. Yeah, we got two people in there. Okay, it's a *6 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button, and you should click that. Now, before we open the queue up, Terry is going to talk about the Constitution a little bit. So we're going to pass the mic over to Terry. And then after Terry's done, we'll take questions, and we'll take it from there. Terry, you got the mic if you want it.
Hi. Okay. I got some prepared things. Can you hear me all right, John?
We can hear you. Go right ahead. Do you want the desktop too or no?
I'm sorry?
You want to take control of the desktop or no?
Yeah, I want to share something.
Okay, so just take it. I think you'll be able to take it away from me.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, John. I will try to maintain the decorum of NLA as I talk just a minute or two about our Constitution.
Okay.
Article 1 is
Take the desktop first.
Take the desktop first, okay.
Yeah, if you want to share. And when you go to share, make sure you hit, let's see, let me take a look at this real quick. Okay, when you share, make sure you click the button, share your audio, okay? You may not need that, but just in case, make sure that button is clicked. All right, there you go. You got it.
Okay, can you see my screen?
We can see your screen.
Oh, I can't. Okay. Article 1 is the largest article and concerns the legislative branch. Article 2 concerns the executive branch, and that is where I will be tonight. Let me share my PDF copy. I just did, and you say you can see it. My PDF copy of the Constitution I have here. I'm on Article 2, and the very first thing, the subject...
Hey, we're not seeing Article 2. We're seeing Oh, yeah, we are seeing Article 2, but can you make it a little smaller because it's running off the screen? I don't know if you're trying to share the entire document or not.
You can't see the right side.
Yeah. I don't need the right side right now.
Okay.
Okay, it'll be better. So Article 2, it deals with executive power. That is the reason for Article 2, Section 1. The subject is the executive powers that we are vested, they're vested in a president of the United States of America. Okay? Now, I'm going to go on down. This is Section 1. I'm going to go down to Section 2, and then I'm going to slide over and talk about Section 3, if I may. Now, can you see Section 3 okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
He shall, and he here is the President of the United States, is talking about powers that the President has. So the President shall, from time to time, give to the Congress information of the State of the Union. That's why we have a State of the Union address every year. And recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. Semicolon. That means we're continuing to talk about his powers. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them, when the Senate and the House disagree with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and shall commission all the officers of the United States. So that's where that comes from. The part that I want to talk about is that he may, on extraordinary circumstances, convene both houses or either of them in case of disagreement with them with respect to time of adjournment. Okay. Is this, what we're going through right now, an extraordinary occasion? We have the Senate stopped after passing a stupid bill that isn't anywhere close to what the House would approve. And then they left early in the morning on Friday. And I got this idea from Glenn Beck today when I was listening. So it's not my idea, but I certainly advocate for it. And that is that if this is an extraordinary occasion, we're at war. We're having trouble keeping all the airports and everybody flowing through like they should be so they don't miss their flights. And everybody's trying to get back so that they can do something here for Easter. A lot of people are traveling for Easter. Is this an extraordinary occasion to convene both houses or either of them? Because there is a disagreement with them. And he can do it for respect to the time of adjournment. I think he wanted a Congress to feel a little pain, and I think they should be doing their jobs. Thune has not been coordinating. He's been sandbagging. The Republicans in the Senate, they have the votes. They could go and produce something as close to the House that the House could consider. But they left on Friday morning real early after passing something. So they said, so that gives them the opportunity to say, well, we passed it before we left. It's up to the House now. And they expect the House to come back. I think this was a dirty trick by the Senate. And I think that the president should exercise this extraordinary occasion, the power to call them back and pull them all back in. And I think it should be done right away so that they can still make it back. They can finish and go home by Easter. It is a shame that our two houses could not work together. Something is going on. My own belief is that Thune is a rhino. And that since he's the ranking member in the Senate for the Republican Party, that he has been dragging his feet. And I think there's somebody else up above him, up above the Republican Party even, that is telling me, oh, no, we can't pass that, save the vote. And and we can't fund the DHS. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm open to suggestions, Jan and Eric and John, whoever's here, as to what you think about that. And I'm done.
Okay, let me take the desktop back. Let's see, stop remote. Let's go through to sharing. Okay, let me know if you see the screen. Yeah, it should be coming through now, right? Yeah, I agree. That's a good idea. I was thinking of the same thing when you were talking, that yes, he does have the power to force them back in. They got to come. And then he can get some, and if not enough come in for their side, he gets enough in for what he needs to get done. They can take control. They've done this to rob us many times. They did this some years back in, 1913, I think it was, when they worked with the 16th Amendment and did it on Christmas Eve. And most of them had, you know, how both houses, I guess, had gone on vacation, you know, for Christmas vacation. And they rammed through the 16th Amendment. They did the same thing, ramming through the 17th Amendment. And so, you know, they're just, again, these people are dead set on destroying our nation. So that's what they're doing. Let me share something real quick from another perspective, looking at the filibuster. You know, the filibuster is a pirate's plunderer, okay? That's what it's all about. That's where it comes from. The filibuster is not mentioned in the United States Constitution, was not part of the Founding Fathers' intentional design for the Senate, and the Senate is the only one that exercised it. The term filibuster derives from the Dutch word for pirate, via Spanish for filibusteraro, I guess it's pronounced, originally referred to the 19th century adventurers who launched unauthorized military expeditions in Latin America. A pirate is one who acts solely on his own authority without any commission or authority from a sovereign state, seizing by force and appropriating to himself or themselves without discrimination every vessel he meets with. Okay, so the filibuster is without constitutional authority in violation of Article 1, Section 3, and Article 5. If you still have that open, can you read? Well, hold it. I do have it written here. So let me read that. It also deprives the Vice President of the United States of his vote when equally divided and plunders the constitutional balance of power. So it destroys the balance of power. They have no power or authority to do this. They made this come up by rule. Okay, and here's what Article 1, Section 3 says. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state chosen by the legislatures. The 17th Amendment destroyed that. Thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. Okay. Article 5, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So they never had the power, the authority. They totally destroyed the balance of the Constitution, the balance of the power in the Constitution with the 17th Amendment. We read on in Article 1, Section 3, Clause 5, that the Vice President of the United States shall be President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. Okay. Now, I believe a case could be made against any senator that initiates a filibuster is guilty of overthrowing or destroying the government in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2385, and I'm not sure whether it's 8 or 18, but I'll call it 8 because that's what I got written. 8 U.S.C. subsection 1481. And because majority of a particular party supports that a senator executing the filibuster in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2384, in any case, President Trump or Speaker Johnson could take this before the U.S. Supreme Court and shut down the filibuster forever. Now, there's only, I think... there's only two times when a more than 50, that I can remember or think of, and Terry, you got the Constitution open, maybe you can take a look if I'm missing this, but I only know of two times particularly when a more than a two-thirds vote is required. A two-thirds vote is required in order to get, in order to go and get the conviction and, of course, first the impeachment in the House and then the conviction in the Senate. They have to have two-thirds votes. The only other time I can remember that a two-thirds vote is required is if the president vetoes the bill. And in order to push it through, they need two-thirds to go past the veto and push the bill through. Now, there's no other place that I'm aware of in the Constitution that permits or requires anything more than a 50-50. So that's a changing of the Constitution again by rule. Same thing that the United States Supreme Court did in 1938 is they changed the law by rule. They shredded the Constitution by a rule. And that's, of course, the Rules and Rules Enabling Act, which what they did, they not only abrogated the law of the land, they also abrogated the rules of the law of the land, which was natural law rules. And then they put it into legislated rules. And then they've also, I think there's like six or seven powers of the sovereign through writs that they have to file into the courts. For instance, a writ of error. A writ of error, they abrogated all that too. They've abrogated all of the sovereigns. Your power of writs, they've abrogated. When you file a writ in the court, okay, they must respond and prove their position and whatever the case may be. But they abrogated that by rule, okay? Well, that's what they did here, the same thing. They destroyed the balance of power. And they had to get the senators, they had to have them voted in, they had to take them away from the states, because if the senators are still run by the states, we'd never be where we're at today. They've never been able to accomplish their goal, because they control the House through special interest groups, and they do the same thing now with the senators. They control them through special interest groups.
Well, John?
They pay them off, yeah.
If I may,
yep.
The Senate was the main arm of the states,
right,
by making the senators elected by a general vote of the public in their states. They took away the power that the state legislatures had over the federal government, and that spelled doomsday.
Right, and I'm not sure I've ever heard that that it's a popular vote by the people. It was the legislators who would. I mean, I'm sorry. It would be the governor who put up, like they go before the Senate with judges. They'd put up someone to pass through as a judgeship. Well, the governor would put up two people to be, you know, senators in the U.S. House of Representatives. And then the legislators would either approve it or not, and they'd put up another person. The key thing about it is they required, therefore, or able to be required, therefore, to force the senators to do the will of the state, and that's the key. And when a senator does not do the will of the state, they can recall him. Just like we, the people, have the power and the authority to recall our congressmen, people don't know that. If we organized in committees of safety and educated ourselves better and worked together, you know, 30, 40, 50 or more people in a county, you can pull out your representative in your Congress and through a recall and force another vote to bring in another person. That's the power of the people. So you had the state that had the ability to do it from the legislative perspective and or the governor, and you'd have the people from their perspective to be able to remove these people from office. Nobody knows that. It's never done, okay? And, of course, the 17th Amendment prevented everything from happening, any control of the Senate. The interesting thing is it is required in Article, I think it's Article 6. Let me see where this is at.
Well, if I may.
Article 6, it says, Article 5, okay. It says here that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So every state has lost any power, any authority, any control over the federal government, because they had that power. It was a balance of power through senators, and the people had the power through their congressmen. Okay, but they've lost it, and that changed completely the balance of power of the Constitution. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, Article 1, Section 4, the times and places and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the places of choosing senators. So that's why they had to have the 16th Amendment. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year. But each house, it basically says, without reading the whole thing, is that the legislature of a state is the one that figures out how they're going to elect their senators. And some of them did turn it into a vote. Some of them, just the legislatures, voted to have a person go. You wanted somebody
that was the original setup, but I would presume this have the power to put it to the people, which wouldn't be a wise idea, though.
Right, okay. Because they wanted somebody who knew the legislature, and the legislature knew them and how they would vote, so they could represent the state properly. And that's what they were looking for. And when they did change it, they had to have, except to the places of choosing senators. So they had to, the legislature had to do that. And by changing the what is it, 16th Amendment or the 17th? I can't remember.
It's the 17th.
They put it to a public vote on all states and essentially made it a thing like the representatives, only they get to stay there for 6 years. And that nullified any input that the legislatures had. And they did it claiming, if you go back and read the old newspapers, they did it claiming that what set it apart. It claimed that there was a bunch of shenanigans going on, and this one guy in Illinois, and I don't remember his name, he paid off every person in the legislature and got his Senate seat. And once that was revealed, they passed the 17th Amendment to make it a public vote of the entire state. In other words, one state screwed up and they made it a different way. I think that was the wrong fix for the problem.
Well, it absolutely is, because common law would prevent that from happening. Remember, this is the original Constitution, you can't change the Constitution that will change the balance of power, number one. And number two, is by changing that balance of power and doing what they did, then the Senate lost its vote, okay? And that is Amendment 5, Article 5. Again, let me read it again. No state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. And even if there was any logic to their reasoning, it was just corruption. I mean, these people are more corrupt than that anyway, but it's just corruption. And that's only in one state, in one situation, at one time period. It's not enough to do anything. It's just ridiculous to begin with. But the bottom line is, it deprived all of the states, as you had mentioned, its equal suffrage in the Senate. And the Constitution says they shall not be deprived of that. You know, they just make things up and say what they want to say. And unfortunately, most people don't pay attention. And they run off of what they hear, the first thing they hear about something, and they think that's the way it should be. And then you can't get it out of their brain, and it causes a lot of problems. People need to be educated. That's why it's so important to get committees of safety going, because you'll have people who are educated in the processes that's required within whatever, committees they're sitting on, whether it's the education committee or whether it's the political committee or militia or whatever committee they're sitting on, okay? People will become educated on that and will find self-correction, you know, as we talk about these things within our committeemen meetings. But in any event, this is the problem we have. But I do believe, because we do talk about the 16th Amendment, which is repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void, even though the United States Supreme Court has ruled on two occasions that it has nothing to do with income tax. But the 16th Amendment is what we want to deal with also in our paper going to the Supreme Court. The 17th Amendment we have to deal with also because of what we're just talking about right now. So we're dealing with all these problems. Like I said, it's probably about 30 problems that they shredded out of the Constitution that needs to be addressed. And if we can bring this to the consciousness of the people, and the only way to do that is to get people talking about it, getting people to see the video, getting people to talk about this on social media, getting them involved in coming here and supporting us and getting educated themselves. So before we move over to the queue here, which will be in a minute or two, I just want to repeat again, on our front page, anybody who wants to connect to our case, okay, you need to take the course. So this is an affordable court access in the common law course. If you click on that, the page will open. You'll get a lot of information on this, and we even give you the first 3 hours of the course so you can see how that course runs. Okay. The other thing, of course, is the affidavit. Anybody who wants to join their case into it as evidence and as leverage, just click on the affidavit for the United States Supreme Court. Follow the guidelines here. Obviously, you delete all the red stuff and put your information in. But we only want one page, and it must be notarized. Extremely important. You got to fix all this, your state, and even the year's got to be fixed on this. So whatever, you got to put that together correctly. People, in order to really understand what we're doing about this, click here and watch the 20-minute video if you haven't seen it. We did play this on our last Monday night program, but click on this, and we lay out all of the problems. Let me just do a real quick movement ahead. That this was a let's see. I'm not going to play this right now, but just want to get an idea of how
people,
much damage these people have done to those who haven't seen it.
Look, must obey the code, Article 3, which states, be encouraged. Procuration of due process, civil law.
Okay.
I
know we have a list.
Roman
here
law,
it is.
Also known as Babylonian law, under the name of civil law via Rule 2.
This is the list of things
they abolished the rules of common law.
We went through the whole list here.
They abrogated and made about 34
that denied
more points
debtors position to the law.
They said,
I'm not going to play that now. All right. If you haven't seen it, do go see it. And please, look it. Nothing's going to happen if we don't get funded. Again, I have enough money to get started, but I don't have enough money to finish. And we don't charge $400,000 or $1 million to take it to the Supreme Court. We're looking just for the costs. No one's getting paid here, okay? So we don't have to give lawyers all our money. But we do need quite a few thousand, maybe $5,000, $6,000 altogether to go through this whole process, all right? So please, everybody should give. You go up here to our top right-hand side of our website. You'll find this on every page. Just click on Donate Now and give a one-time donation and consider giving us $5 a month or more on a regular basis. You could do that under our Donation tab. Okay. And I'd like to make another note here because we've been having a lot of problems with our email. And we got a few people we have to contact because they have their email set up, but when the email goes to them, it gets blocked, and then it requires us to go out and push some buttons or do something for them to get the email. And that causes a problem trying to get our emails out. Also, some people may change their email and forget to change it on our site, and then that causes another problem. That's one of the reasons why we were down. We had quite a few bad emails, and our email server, you know, which we pay for to send emails, bulk emails, our email server kept shutting us down for that reason. And there were other problems, too, but that was one of the major reasons we had. We just had too many, emails that were bouncing, and they don't permit that because what happens then are the email servers that are receiving the email, the email servers that are sending the email, if they have enough violations, they prevent them from coming in and sending any of their email to the email servers that are sending the email to, you know, whatever server you have, you know, Proton or you know, whatever the different service that you have as far as for your email, you know. So please, everyone, make sure that your email is going through and not bouncing, and that we don't have to go out and push buttons. We're going to try to get to some of the people that we do have problems with, and hopefully they'll correct their problems. But it does cause a major problem for us. So please see what you can do. Okay, we're going to take our first call. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1, if you're on a phone, Apple browser should be a button. Let's take first caller, Jay. What state you're from? Looks like Kong. What state you're from? First name and your state. You'll be unmuted. I believe you've been unmuted. Maybe not. Let me try to get to you. I see I kicked you out or something. Let me try it again. Good. You've been unmuted, Jay. What's your first name? Hey.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. What's your first name and your state?
My name is Jones. I'm from California. My question is, when I filed my paperwork, I stated on the court of record. So in the court of record, even as an individual, I'm to the tribunal and I'm still in charge of that court, right? Is that correct?
Well, look, when you come in with a court of record, they're not recognizing a court of record. They don't even know what a court of record is, okay? The only ones that know what a court of record is in the federal level. Those are the only judges I've ever come in contact with that understand it. But all the lawyers, they have no clue what a court of record is. They think a court of record is and this is how bad their education is, but they think a court of record is a court that keeps a record. Well, every court keeps a record, okay? But if you go into Black's Law or Bovier's Law, of course, it's defined as that which proceeds according to the common law, to natural law. Even though I put it on every one of my cases, and I always put a footnote. I use lots of footnotes, so I explain myself the meaning of the words that they should know, but they don't. So I put footnotes in. So the footnotes should tell them what it is. But also, I've learned now that what I do is I put in big bold letters up even right underneath that this is a court of record, jury trial demanded. Okay, they still ignore it. They still don't give it to you. Maybe you'll get lucky, but that's the problem. You don't have common law no more. You don't have natural law. You don't have a constitution. It doesn't exist in these courts. People need to realize this. So, this is a serious problem.
Okay, so basically it is basically useless, even if I put in a court of record and I'm the tribunal and the magistrate has no power to the tribunal, basically, right?
Right. Basically, court of record, there can be no judge. The judge in a court of record is 12 individuals called a tribunal. That's, of course, the jury. And in a court of record, they do not have the power or the authority to do any summary judgments. They can't sit there and decide, we're going to allow this, evidence you have. Or witnesses you have, they may say, well, we'll let you have this witness, but you can't have that witness, you can't have that witness, and you can't have that information. You can't file that paper, and you can't file this. They throw all your evidence out, okay? And they do all that by summary judgment. Well, they actually make just decisions on that. I guess they'll call it summary judgments. Now, summary judgments in the details throughout the case is not permitted either, okay? The only summary judgment that they could do is that if the case is so overwhelming that the other side just doesn't, they already lost it on paper and you can't go any further, then you could move the court for a summary judgment. And, of course, the other side will, object to it. And then you have the hearing, and then they could make the summary judgment from the hearing. Okay? And that's the only way a judge or a magistrate could make a ruling. Now, every judge is a magistrate, so when you go into a courtroom, you might have a judge actually go in there and sit, but then he has to put on his magistrate cap. But they treat magistrates as if they are judges, okay? They've changed everything around, all right? But the magistrate will go in there and they'll act as a judge, when in fact they're not permitted. They have to just, what their job is to be like a traffic cop, move things along, keep it fair, and then execute the judgment of the jury, pass it on to the sheriff for execution and enforcement, and that's their job, nothing more. But they control everything.
They still control everything. We still vacate the judge's order. We don't agree with his order, right? And we can motion them to do things a certain way also, right? Motion them to reverse it, to the judge's habit a different way, right?
Well, if it depends on the case, and you know, it depends on the situation. I have filed quite a few, you know, writs of error. And on the state level, they don't realize that it's been abrogated, but they do ignore it, and they just move on anyway. The federal courts, you know, they'll tell you that doesn't exist no more. You can't do a writ of error no more. A writ of error is a very powerful paper, and the writ of error gives them the opportunity for you to lay out all the problems on why they're making a decision in a wrong fashion. Then, of course, you got the appeal process. On the state level, you have two appeals, okay, and then the final would be the state U.S. Supreme Court, you know, on the upper level. But on the in the federal courts, you can appeal it, okay, and then you go up to the Supreme Court. But you can move it through the state and then eventually move it into the federal courts if it is a constitutional violation. And remember, every court you go into is a chancery court already, and that gives you the constitutional violation right there.
Okay.
In order to know these things and understand them, you know, we give a course on these things. It's a 98. Then they'll learn how to go through the courts. And so I know on court access by the bar, their course is 60 hours. Our course is 90 hours. We teach the common law, okay, and lay out the truth about, you know, how the court should work. So and that's what our case going to the Supreme Court is all about. We have to get to the Supreme Court. And by the way, going to the Supreme Court, we are not asking them for anything. We are commanding them obedience to the Constitution and to acknowledge it in writing, to reopen the courts of justice that they have closed. And if it falls, look, if it goes to the Supreme Court and nobody's watching, what do you think they're going to do with it? That's why we need people behind us. And people who just supporting us is key, but we need to get this conversation out into social medias. Most everybody goes onto social media. And you have all these conversations. Bring up the conversations that we're talking about here. Share this video. Share the front page of our website. Talk about, educate yourself on our front page. Talk about this on social medias. And help to get our video to go viral. And then we will have the people behind us. I believe we're going to have the administration behind us. And if we do get a good results on the midterm elections, then we could possibly have the Senate and the Congress both behind us, and we can really be effective, and we can save the Republic. Because right now, you can dream all you want. People are living in a fiction. We don't have a Republic no more, and they've convinced the people we're a democracy. Our founding fathers were crystal, crystal clear. There's not an inkling of a democracy in our process that they have set up. And there is nowhere in the Constitution, nowhere in the debates, the only thing in the debates concerning democracy is that it was horrible, they want no part of it. But other than that, there's nothing in the Constitution, nothing in our founding documents at all, Declaration of Independence, nothing that even mentions a democracy. Yet they've convinced the people that's what we are. We even have Supreme Court justices calling us a democracy. Can you imagine that? That's insane.
So in California, we got rid of all the writs. You can't write a writ of error. You can't write a writ of anything, right?
Well, there are certain writs you can write, but they ignore them anyway. We've written hundreds or at least 100 habeas corpuses. They've ignored every one of them.
Yeah,
okay. So that's a power that they didn't get rid of, but they wanted to get rid of. They tried that in 1938 also. They tried a movement here in New York to get rid of the trial jury they tried to get rid of. Okay?
Yeah. So basically, all I can do is vacate the judge's order if I disagree with his decision. And then if he does, well, I've already challenged jurisdiction for the rent board and this and that. So I can, if the judge still denies my case, I can still vacate his order.
Well, if you like that. The errors in his or her decision, I would file a writ of error. I still file writs of error. Okay, I still file them. And then you can move them up the line. Even though, because look at my opinion, and I've even made this to the court case, some of my court cases, I've made this point out that I will accept the rules as long as they are not repugnant to the natural law. And natural law is nothing more than really common sense. It's just a lot of maxims building up a case. You know, all men are created equal. That's a maxim. That's common sense. Okay. Clearly, we are under the laws of nature and of nature's God. Declaration, the foundation of who we are as a people, the foundation of our law. That's who we are. It's common sense. Unalienable rights. All the rights we have is common sense. And a decision in a court of law is the combination of common sense and that which is just and right. And God has already written in the hearts of all men to know the difference between right and wrong. We can look at a case, hear a story, and say, wow, that is horrible. You know, we know when a person has been injured. And we, because we live in the same neighborhood as them, we can appreciate how we might restore them. You know, there's biblical restoration. You know, if you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four. Okay, so there's a principle right there. And I know the Supreme Court has ruled in the past up to 10 times. So, you know, again, we have to get back to common sense. And the people, you know, people are confused, even though they still have their common sense, because there's so much against their common sense that's out there in the world of conversations, okay, they lose their common sense out there, and they hesitate, and they, you know, no, we got to get a bold. We know what common sense is. We know what's right from wrong. We know the difference. We know when something is right. All men are created equal. Who's going to argue against that? You can't, you know, water does not flow uphill. Who's going to argue against that? You see, that's called a maxim. You can't go against it, okay? And truth is self-evident. That's the beginning in our law, ultimately in the Declaration of Independence, that truth is self-evident. Okay, you know, in our Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution, one of the requirements that they are to be obedient to is to protect. Let me find the right word. The blessings of liberty. Okay, so you know, and they don't do that at all. I mean, once they violate the Constitution, they're not protecting our blessings of liberty. Okay, let me see if I can get the exact words. I don't know why I forgot them. Sometimes I forget these things. But in any event, okay, look at, we read here in the Constitution, right in the preamble, okay, we the people in the United States, so on and so forth. And at the end of this, there are 6 points that are being made, and one of it is to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. You see, we the people ordained because we're the kings. We are the lawmakers. People don't realize that. That's why a jury can nullify a law. They got the power and the authority because they are the lawmakers. We have the law powers above the legislators. We can knock it right out in a courtroom, say, nope, doesn't work, we don't like it. Out of here. So, but people don't even know these powers and authorities that they have. But they have no power or authority to create law that controls we, the people. They don't have that power or authority. Well, okay, well, with that, we got to move on. So you got to find
one more question. One question.
Go ahead.
Okay, after we make the judge's orders or write a writ of error, what's after that? What do we do after that?
Well, after that, you see what happens. And again, look at, usually a writ of error, when I write a writ of error, I may use different words than lie, but pretty much I do say, the lawyer is lying. I sworn to everything I said. I laid this out. They twisted everything upside down, backwards, and didn't swear to it. And the court has no power, no authority to make any authority. An affidavit rules the courtroom. I make that whole point. Okay? The affidavit rules the court. They have no affidavit. They never have an affidavit. Never. Okay? So your affidavit rules the court to begin with. And you lay out the facts. Well, they said this, but the fact of the matter is this, and here's my proof. And judges will still ignore that and go forward and still run off the lies because he feels protected on that. And that's why I do a writ of error. They try to throw it back. I throw it right back at them. And I will then install it into my appeal and work it up the line. But then they try to throw it out because we don't have the power of writ of error anymore. It's horrific. People, we need to save this republic. We need to save this republic.
I agree, and I'm but yeah, I'm still new at this. But yeah, okay, thank you. Appreciate your help.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller, please. Let's see if we got someone. There it is, Sean, it looks like. What state you're from?
California.
How you doing?
Good. I was in last week, and for whatever reason, when you called on me, you guys couldn't hear me. My internet was kind of in and out.
Okay, well, you sound good now.
Yeah, great. So I'm the one with the husband who's been in 40 years plus in California.
Right, we spoke about that on a couple occasions, yep.
Correct, yeah. And I just wanted to, well, I'm glad I showed up when I did because I want to join and add our case, and I'll be completing that affidavit and making a gift. And I just wanted to update you. So since December 6th, my husband is now having his Eighth Amendment right violated, in that they are subjecting him to cruel and unusual punishment. He was assaulted 5 times between December 6th and February 26th, and they keep putting him back out on the same yard to be assaulted again, and claiming that they don't have enough evidence to prove that he was assaulted, even though he had to get medical attention one time because they were concerned he might have had a traumatic brain injury. He was knocked unconscious on 2 occasions, and he had, you know, huge black eyes and busted lips and bumps on his head. And they claimed they, you know, even though he pointed out and named who the perpetrators were, they claimed it wasn't enough. But on the 26th of February, he was actually assaulted on the yard on camera in front of 3 officers. And they put him in protective custody for just a couple of days and then put him right back out on the yard. And they didn't, this time they really screwed up because they didn't do any documentation whatsoever. They didn't give him a lockup order. They didn't produce an incident report. And they didn't send him to a classification committee.
You know, when they hire these people, because this is throughout the justice system, I can't swear to this, but in my mind, the only conclusion I can come up with is, you know, first of all, they ask questions. They do a psychological on anyone they got that they're going to bring into the system to hire them, you know, to work in a prison or, and even police officers. They like police officers with low IQ. And I've heard here in New York, a lot of people who have high IQs, they can't become a police officer. They won't accept them. And so they like people with low IQ to begin with. And they like people who are showing tendencies. This is my opinion now. They like people who are showing a tendencies of being a sociopath or something. Because they want all of this problems. They want people to be hurt, and they want people who go in and torture people. They want all this. You know, there's a guy, a CIA guy, and he's all over the place. He's even got his own, I'm trying to think, he's got a weird name. I know his first name is John, but his last name is weird. I don't remember it. And but he's been on Joe Rogan. He's been on a lot of places, and he has his own podcast that he does also, and he went to jail because he was a whistleblower, and he refused to torture people, and it turns out that all these people, a lot of these CIA agents that are out in the field, they were taught how to torture, and they're executing that. What is wrong with these people? And it's against the law.
Right.
And he was a whistleblower, and he went to jail for this. Okay. But in any event, this is the problem we have. And this problem is not going to fix itself. If people want to live under a Gestapo, then don't do nothing. Don't send no money in. Don't put up videos out anywhere. Don't try to get on to conversations going on onto social media. Don't do any of those things if you love being abused like this, and your children will be abused, and your friends and your parents and anybody who ends up in court. If it's up against the status quo, if it's up against the government itself, they're going to abuse you to death. And if they can put you in jail, they will. And they will make you suffer in every way they can. You can look at the Hammonds cases where they pinned this guy to the floor. He couldn't even reach the toilet. And he couldn't reach his bed. And they pinned him to the floor in a cold concrete room, gave him no blanket, no pillow, no nothing. And this is what they do. And they send you through what's called, some therapy. It's really... Goodness, what's it called? They actually put you in a vehicle, and you spend a whole day moving around, and they drop you off in another place at the end of the day. Then they pick you up and move you again. And they do this over and over and over. You're constantly moving. Diesel therapy, that's what it's called. And people have been stuck in this for months on end. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. And if people want to live under a world like that, they want to live under a nation and a court system that operates that way, then don't do nothing. Just sit there and don't do nothing. But if you're sick and tired of this, you need to support what we're doing. We need to get this before the Supreme Court, and we have to get the people's eyes on this.
Right.
We need help.
Right. Well, I'm with you, John, and I'm doing everything I can within what I know to do. Anything I learn, I do to try and get my man out. And as you recall, over the years, you know, all the writs that we've filed, all of them have been denied. With these assaults, I can't even get the ombudsman, won't even call me back now to file a report. It's just disgusting. I mean, nobody, literally none of these people are doing their job. So I put my story together and I sent it on the electronic form to the White House. And I actually got a response, and they said that they carefully reviewed the story and that they forwarded on to what they called the appropriate department. And then I got a letter back from the Department of Justice, which is, I knew that's who they were forwarding it to. And then I got an email back from the Department of Justice, and they said that after further review, they were referring me to the local FBI office here in Los Angeles. And so I did talk to an agent a couple of weeks ago, and she said to give her a couple of weeks to look into it, and then she would call me back. So we're in that waiting period right now.
This is good news, and it's also some proof to the things that I'm talking about, the fact that we believe that this administration is with us. We have the greatest administration in the history of America. Dave, maybe in our founding Father's Day, but I don't even know if we had one this great, because there was a division back then too. But we have an administration. These people are educated. They're righteous people. They're just people. They're not lost in the criminal activities, and they want to save this nation, and they're tired of. They truly do want to make America great again, and we need to seize the opportunity to get into the Supreme Court and have these people behind us, because when we lose these people, and if we don't get these kind of people back, we won't get another chance.
Yeah. Well, and these particular people, especially Trump, as we know, is anointed by God. He has the hand of God on him. He's doing God's work.
God says he raises up governments and he takes governments down. And he also said that before he comes, he judges nations. Isaiah 14 talks about that. Nations will be judged before the Lord comes. And we're seeing that right now. And so, yes, I agree with you on that.
So is there a deadline for when you want this affidavit? I didn't notice
that. Well, as soon as possible. We can always add things on as we go. I'm going to start. I'm going to try to start writing papers. look at. If I see the money coming in to support it, I go faster. If I don't see the money coming in, I'm going to take my time a little bit. We do have enough to get started, but I hate to get started and then drop the case because we can't go nowhere without money. You know? And that's a problem. And we're not looking for $100,000 or $400,000 or $1 million, because that's what lawyers charge. We're not looking for it. No one's getting paid here, by the way. This is all hard costs, you know?
I know. And I am a monthly subscriber. subscriber for you guys. It's not much, but I'm happy to give a larger gift to attach my affidavit, and I'll get working on that tomorrow. I can send you the gift quicker than I can send you the affidavit.
I appreciate that. And look, if anybody's interested in just signing, you know, maybe we'll put something up. I have to think about what we would write. But I'd write something where people would just sign their names in agreement to it, you know, in order to just get people behind this. But cases are important. You know, we have a couple of hundred cases, which is the proof that we have been working on for years now, okay, accumulating proof. And we can now show without any doubt, you go into any court of justice, there's no doubt conspiracy between all these judges.
Oh, yeah.
Conspired to close the courts of justice. They have conspired to nullify the Constitution, the law of the land. They have conspired to do these things because they all do the same thing the same way. Whether you're filing in a federal court in California, New York, New Hampshire, New England, it doesn't matter where you go. It's all the same. They do the same thing. That proves conspiracy.
Last thing, I don't know, I spoke to you before about Tanoa Downing and Jessica Saxton, who have their own grassroots effort that they're doing from the ground up, which it was called We Shall Be Free, but now they're calling it Justice Without Limits, and they've really gotten really more organized. But recently on Facebook, and I wish I would have saved it, recently on Facebook, I saw that their Facebook page had posted something, and they were referencing, and the guy was scrolling on your website, and he mentioned National Liberty Alliance, but he was talking about how you guys basically have something on your website that proves the theory that, because most people think it's a theory, I know it's fact, about these tribunals that have been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have something like that on your website? Because I didn't see it.
Lay this out, and the case we're writing is going to lay it out very clearly. We indicted the entire federal judiciary because of that. They're all guilty of subversion, every single one of them. And so we indicted the federal judiciary, and we sent that indictment up through the administration, and we sent the indictment also to the United States Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court, again, they have a doorkeeper there. They just kick it out. They don't let it get in.
Right.
So this is the problem we're facing. That's why we got to go up through the trial process. And like I said, it's going to take 4 to 6 months to get our papers to the door, to the front steps of the Supreme Court. And then it's going to take pressure for them to hear it. And they're going to have no choice. Look, I think the papers that we're going to write are so damning. They're pretty much almost written anyway because we've already been through a lot of this process. But but a lot of things I want to add. There's a lot more that has to be added to this, and it has to be brought together. So I could put the case together pretty quick in a week or two. I'm dragging my feet a little bit only because, I just got a little bit of money coming in from one person, which is enough to get going. But again, look, we need to do this thing. We really need it.
Yeah.
And people need to understand how bad we need this. If they want the republic that our founding fathers set forward for us, then they need to step up. Everybody needs to step up. Even if it's just giving us donations, just step up.
Right. Right.
So.
Well, I'm in.
All right. Thanks a lot. We're going to move to our next call. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to, by the way, this is the last person in the queue. If anybody else wants to get in the queue, it's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. It should be a button if you're on an app or a browser. Valerie, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you from?
Hi, I'm in Georgia.
Valerie, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I just wanted to ask a question. This was a case maybe like a year or so ago, and it was dealing with family court, and...
Oh, that's the most evil court in the entire United States.
Oh, man, I hate to even bring this to you all because you guys got so much you won't deal with on your own. But, okay, so it's with me and a father.
By the way, we are going to try to shut... Hold on. We are going to... If we can succeed in the federal courts, and I do believe we can, we are going to shut down family court. Family court is so repugnant to everything, okay? To natural law, it's repugnant. To our Constitution,
yes.
It's It's repugnant. To the Bill of Rights, it's repugnant. Look, it's nothing but a bunch of lawyers making a whole bunch of money, and they never do anything, and they drag these kids' lives through all kinds of crap.
Oh,
and they
man, yeah.
Families, they destroy children. It's a horrific, horrible situation. The,
yes.
The one that's second to this is the probate courts. The probate courts are just as bad. They got to look at a probate court, if it's operating properly, is okay. A probate court is good when there's no one there to take control of a situation, okay? If someone dies, you got a family, probate court has nothing to do with you, okay? Just stay away from us because the family will take care of this. And if they have to fight it out in court, then that's their business. It has nothing to do with probate. Probate is when someone dies or any kind of a situation where there is money or something nobody is there, they don't know what to do, then that's what a probate court is for, to try to figure out what can be done. But people go to probate court thinking they're going to get solutions. All they do is they bring in all of their money, that their inheritance and everything, someone who died or whatever, they're bringing all that into the court and just giving it on to the lawyer in the court because they're going to lose every penny. They will drag this on for years until you are broke, and you will get nothing.
Yeah.
So don't ever volunteer to go into a probate court. They're the second most evil court.
So, they did try to ruin my family, but
yeah,
I don't
know
how I was managed to get through it, but
they will take your parents and not even allow you to see them because they got to decide what has to be done. Look, this is a family thing. This is nothing.
Oh, they do worse than that. They act like they couldn't find my address, and what they did is waited a while and conspired with the other parent after we came up with an agreement that you can see your child, just not alone, especially since I caught you in the tub with him with no clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, no. So I didn't take that away from him, but we came to agreement. Then they told him, wait a while, you're going to come back down here. Then we're going to pretend that we don't know what her address is, and we're going to do it without her, and that's exactly what they did. Then they came to my house in Alabama, but they wait till after hours so that way the sheriff couldn't be involved because that should have been a wet ink signature so it could be recorded with the sheriff's office so they could have it on record. They didn't do that. And so they seized my son out of my house not knowing that this person has a sickness.
A lot of them, because they don't have a wet ink signature, and that is a major problem. And another thing that people don't think about or realize, not only a wet ink signature, there also has to be an affidavit attached to that warrant.
When they came to my house, I said, do you have a Fourth Amendment warrant? No. To my court order warrant, I said, no, that's not a warrant at all. But see, they know I know something because they waited till Friday, till after the sheriff's office was closed. Then they came to my house because they had all day to do that. And you don't understand that you turned my child over to someone that's sick. That's the problem. You turned my child over to this person. I'm just not allegedly. I have plenty of proof. So I had no choice but to come back to Georgia, where I'm from anyway, because I couldn't be driving back and forth from Alabama to up here. Then I don't trust him at all with my child. So he tries to keep me quiet, the secret quiet, because it's pretty much like he don't return my child to me, but on the account I don't say anything, but I'm not being quiet. I don't care about that. I'm not going to be quiet. So I went to the authorities here and let them know what's happening. And I made a report. They turned around and used his address to make like he the one called. And then they closed my case behind my back. Then allow me to, the detective said, hey, I'm going to send you a link where you can upload your info. And the Adult Protective Services came and talked to me. Well, my child is somewhat language impaired, but he can tell. Come to find out, they did away with her paperwork. They left my paperwork out. Then they tried to defame me and made like something is wrong with me, put that on the police report. I don't have any medical record. I use natural remedies, so I don't have a medical record. So they put that on the police report to try to defame me. You took the attention off my son, the one that's being affected, and put it on me. And I'm like, I just don't understand. Like, why would you do that? then you put his address like he the one who called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, again, you know, like I said, there's a lot of psychopaths or sociopaths involved in all of these different, and you know, no matter how you go through the justice system and you know, the police department and the sheriff, look, at sheriffs don't even know what the Constitution is. They go to a lawyer, which is their job to enforce the law, not a lawyer's job. They right. should know the law. They should understand. They're supposed to be law enforcement officers. They're not supposed to be code enforcement lawyers, nor are they to be bar attorney enforcement lawyers. In other words, go to a bar attorney for them to tell them what to do, which will always be to protect the status quo. And
yeah, I contacted a sheriff here in that town where I was. He knew nothing about it. He was very nice. He said, "I'm so sorry," and I got this in email as proof. He was like, "I know nothing about it. They didn't come to me, give me anything, didn't alert me, didn't record nothing." He told me, "I hope that you get some type of remedy." He did yeah. say that to me in writing, because like they know good and well that they supposed to go to them and give them wet inks, because if anything is being seized, the sheriff's supposed to do that, from my understanding, from what I read.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
So I was wondering if it's too late, because I wanted to send the, and she's a black lady, but well, none of that matters.
You
they all in together.
You can fight this from the perspective of the denial of due process. Okay?
Yes, I didn't get that, because I wouldn't have been happy to go, but I would like to have went there to give my side of the story. But I didn't get that chance. They colluded behind my back. We're going to make like we don't have her address, and I don't know how was that the truth, because his attorney that he had sent paperwork to my P.O. box at the time, and plus I went down there and gave them my P.O. box, and they stamped the paper that I gave them. Mm-hmm. I gave them my We the People paperwork. You act like you didn't get none of that paperwork. And they went behind my back, and I didn't get due process. It's several violations that they committed, and I'm not going to let it go, because my son, who's language impaired, he's still being touched on to this day, and the parent want me to be quiet about it. I don't talk too much about him about it, because for safety purposes, but like he wants me to be quiet. He doesn't want me talking about this, and on account of, but pretty much he's only doing it to keep control, which I'm not in want to be in control. That's not why I'm a parent. I created this on my own. I take responsibility that I chose somebody that I didn't really get to know. So that's my fault. But at the same time, I've been nothing. Okay, he had plenty of chance to come get, if something was really wrong with me, like you say, how come you didn't try to come get your child from zero all these years? He's 18 now. He turned 18 in December. You never tried to come get your child. None of that, but the moment that I catch you doing something inappropriate, and he had been doing this for years behind my back, eventually the child starts showing signs of things, and you never tried to come get your child, but only after I caught you, now something is wrong with me.
Well, have you tried doing an affidavit and giving it to the sheriff?
I haven't. That's why I'm on the phone, too, because I was going to start getting paperwork tomorrow.
Demand for your child to be medically, you know, to have a, you know, have them checked out in a hospital by a doctor.
I did. Matter of fact, I took him across the street, because all day long, now he's special need. What in the world does he know about anything that's sexual? I mean, this is what, it's so bad that I can't take him to the park, nowhere.
If you can get the word to them, you know, because look at, I noticed, and this has been happening for a long time since my children are young, so it's been going a long time, where, you know, you take your kids to the hospital, you know, to have, because for an emergency or whatever the case may be, they start asking them all kinds of questions, you know, how's things going on in your home? Are you depressed? Are you abused? They actually ask those questions in the emergency room. I know they did with my children.
Yeah, they did. They came to me and asked me some questions, and I was very honest with what is happening. I let the doctor see, and they was like, wait a minute. What is a person that is language impaired, who's on the autism spectrum, and he has health problems? why is he doing this? Because, I mean, when I say he's doing this all day long, I got a video here that I just recorded him of him playing with something. He went and got a bunch of grease. Then he started rubbing it on the grease, talking about wee worm. I'm not even dating. I don't care to date. I don't bring no one around my house to my children, period. I'm not involved and I don't care to be. And even if I did, I would never bring anyone to my home. I'd just go out somewhere. But the fact, he only go between me and the dad. But because I caught him in action, that's when. And then before that, my son started showing signs of being touched on. That's how I found out. When he would come back home, he would just be doing inappropriate thing, and his sibling would be looking at me like, "Mom, what's happening with him? What's going on?" So I have paper trail. I do. I have paper trail. Well, I'm not just allegedly accusing someone.
Put it all together and build an affidavit around it. And get it to the sheriff and see if the sheriff will act on it. You know, there are professionals, when you make a report like that, there are professionals out there that can, talk to the child and pull out, what's really going from the child.
The Adult Protective Service, she was able to pull out information to him, but when they closed my case so quick, they left her paperwork out, my paperwork out, and only had his side of the story, and then had his address like he the one that called.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I don't know how this all works with this, but again, like I said, they get low IQ people, they get people who are...
Yes, they do.
They get people
My
who are...
My thing is the courthouse, is what that judge, she the one that I need to send that full warrant to ask for her oath of office, for her stuff like that. I'm ready to send that, and I want to get permission first before I send that paperwork. Is it okay to use those forms? Because I need her to answer what gives her authority to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't know enough about this individual to turn my child over to somebody. He been with me all these years up to 18 years old. And then you just turn my child over to somebody random like
that. Well, there is a conspiracy without the theory. There is a conspiracy. It's been around for a long time. And they put the right people in the right places to do the will of what they want to be done. And what they need to do in order to change our nation is they have to destroy God, they have to destroy family, they have to destroy the justice system. And they've accomplished that goal. And people need to wake up, and we need to do something about it. And we are doing something about it right now, right here,
wonderful,
going to the Supreme Court, but we need the support of the people.
Okay.
So we need to be...
Well, I do have my donation. Well, I send it every month. And so I'll start sending a little extra, anything to help out, because you guys don't even have to do any of this. You can be like, just let y'all go on your own. But it's wonderful to see that you guys are trying to help, and I appreciate it. Gratitude. I'm very thankful.
Sure.
Now, the affidavit, what would I get that from to send to the sheriff? Because he's very cooperative.
Well, if you go on to the front page, well, actually, if you go on to Education Starts Here.
Okay.
In my desktop, go to Education Starts Here, click highlight, come down to Law, okay, then come down and then move over and you come down to Court Forms and Process. In here, you'll see an affidavit form, and you just make it yours. I mean, it just lays out the framework for an affidavit, okay? So you'll find an affidavit in here, probably a couple of different affidavits, just the forms. For instance, here is an affidavit of default. Okay, that kind of gives you sort of a framework. Affidavit of service, affidavit of default, affidavit. In our course, we also have regular affidavit. Here's an affidavit right here. Okay. Affidavit of default, affidavit of service, and affidavit. Okay.
Okay.
But in Word, we have it in PDFs. So just go here and you can get your things. And anybody who is planning to go into the courts, anybody who wants to send their case in, they really need to be able to take care of their case once we get through the system. And so it's going to be 6 months or more to get up to the doors of the Supreme Court. Hopefully we'll get into the Supreme Court, but only if there's pressure from the people, pressure from the administration, and hopefully we'll have by that time, good people up in Congress and in the Senate so that we can, get the support there too through the midterms. We'll see what happens with that. But, you got 6 months. You can get a good education in 6 months and be very good.
I'm taking the course. I already know some things, but it'll be better if I just take the whole course. So
take the whole course. And let me give you a little. I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the course. I know I mentioned some of this. Don't bother taking notes. If you want to take bullet points, that's fine, but that's all. Don't take notes, because we already have all the notes. You'll have access to this. You can go back at any time. You can replay the videos. You can look at all the chapters and all of the different documents we have for each chapter. The thing is this, is you go through the course and just follow through. Just take it in and take your time, because once you get through the whole course, then you can go back and you can start doing your homework and the things you have to do, you know, writing my papers, got to do this, got to do that. And repetitiveness is the key to knowledge and at least retaining, let's put that.
Mm-hmm. I just got one more question and that's it.
Yeah.
Now the courthouse is Montgomery County Courthouse. Is it too early to send, since this part is already, have already played out, but is it too late to send her the quo warranto, the one that asked for her bond, special clearance, and all
yeah,
that names? Is it too early to send that? I could send that to them.
You could do that with a demand on the bond.
Okay.
You can come down and physically ask for it, and you mm-hmm. know, start with where you think it should be. It should be in the county building, you'd imagine. But
okay.
You know, you have to trace it out. And you have to push it. If you don't push it, you're not going to get it. But you can't
yes.
get it, really push it, oaths and bonds. You know, quo warranto is...
I know they created bonds in my name. I guarantee you in the background. I guarantee they created bonds in my name. Guarantee you.
Well, they also abrogated the quo warranto. Again, this is every writ of the sovereign, every sovereign's writ, they have abrogated every single one of them. The only one they haven't been able to, and they've tried numerous times, is you know, your right of habeas corpus. But instead of abrogating it, since they couldn't abrogate it, they just ignore it. So
yeah.
That's a problem. But I got to go. It's late, and I do have one person in the queue. I'm going to give them a few minutes. So.
Okay. Thank you so much. Gratitude.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We'll take our last caller here. First name and your state. 816.
Rhonda, Missouri.
Oh, how you doing? Good to hear
great,
from
great.
You.
Yes.
I only got a minute or two. Sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah. I have several cases I would like to have the affidavit. Is it a limit to how many affidavits?
No, not at all. I got a number of cases myself. All we need is we want to do one page, and you can refer to the case number and give a you know, again, if you read the affidavit form. Let me go back here and get back here. If you go to the affidavit form, okay, because we got a lot of paperwork and it doesn't make any sense to put all these cases, the whole case, we'd never be able to get all the paperwork anyway. So you do one thing. Basically, you're referring to the case number, whether it's criminal case or it's a civil case, name of the court, the address of the court, the date filed, the county, plaintiff, defendants, and you know, one to four sentences talking about the disposition of the case, and then the violations. And you want to focus in on your Bill of Rights, each of the different violations. One of the main ones that everyone should be focusing in on is that they didn't get due process. They abused your right of due process. But there's a lot of other rights you can add. If you know, you can add them. Try to do it in one page for each case. That's it.
Okay, and that would be 100 per case.
No. People just give us some money, whatever they can afford. I don't want to block anyone out, but I'd like to ask people for $50 or more, okay? And if you got three or four or five cases, you don't have to send in $50 for each one of them. You know, again, we're not here to make money, but we need money to do what we're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just one more question. I know you talk about the Morgan Dollar Silver, whatever. Have you been successful in getting paid that away?
Nope, not yet.
Okay.
I have the same problem everybody else has. You know, they just abuse you in the courts.
Okay.
And they do it up on a federal level, too. I mean, look, if you're going to go into the court and you're not going up against the status quo, okay, and you're not going up against the system, which is the status quo, or big corporations, which is the status quo, but you're going against an individual that's not connected because they'll protect that person, then you have a chance possibly of winning a case.
Mm-hmm. And just one more question as far as the affidavits. Would we be, are we working to try to, what, get a new trial, or is it?
Oh, yeah. You have to you've never had a trial, no matter what they've done. Even if they've put someone in jail, and even if they're out of jail, they never had a trial because they were tried in a chancery court and not a court of record. They haven't been trialed in a court of justice. Okay? So any case that has taken place since 1938 is an unlawful case. Everybody in prison ultimately deserves a rehearing of their case because they were convicted in a chancery court. And even when they did the jury, they stacked the jury. It was still chancery because the judge still controlled the evidence flow. They controlled the witness flow. They controlled the juries. They stacked the juries, and they even controlled the grand juries. I mean, they controlled it all.
Mm-hmm.
We've written papers on every one of these situations, and we're going to be addressing every one of these situations in our papers. But the thing is that yes, you if we're successful, and I think we have a good opportunity to be successful. If we're successful, then you're going to have the opportunity to take this court back to the courts, resurrected, and without paying for it, because we shouldn't be paying for anything. We pay their salaries, we pay for the building, we pay for their computers, we pay for the secretaries, we pay for all of their clerks, we pay for everything. Why do they want more money from us?
Right.
You know, this fee to go into the courts has always been for fictions. That's what it was for. They knew what they were doing. They wanted to move it from fiction to the people, because they call people fictions anyway to take your IRS money. But the thing is that this is for fictions only. If a corporation goes into the court, yeah, they should charge them a fee. I agree on that. If an individual goes in, one of the people, there's no way they should pay a penny. Everything should be free.
Right.
And we're pushing for that, too. I mean, look, they've taken everything from us. And mm-hmm. So we're going to push for that also. Now, again, we need the support of the people. We need this to go viral. And people need, if they're going to put their case in, you don't have to if you don't want to, but it'd be silly if you don't, take our court access in the common law course, because you need to be able to defend your case in court, unless you want to give a whole bunch of money to these lawyers. But we've got to get rid of bar attorneys, too. That's going to take a little while after we take the courts back. Then we're going to focus in on getting rid of bar attorneys. Resurrect the original 13th Amendment, which we will be bringing up in our case, the original 13th Amendment.
Okay, then. Well, thank you for your answer, and that's it. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you. All right. Good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and Bible studies on Wednesday right here in this room, 7:30 Eastern time. Anybody interested? I forget what the titles are this week, but in any event, I know it's a two-part study. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Let me close down things here. Okay. Cut off.